Today's guest is Caroline Boquist, one of the warmest and most thoughtful people I know. Caroline is the co-founder of Walrus Design, a contemporary lifestyle boutique with a thoughtful curation of products for you, your loved ones, and your home. Today, we'll chat about her journey with Walrus, her role with Petra Kucha, and her approach to parenting. Thank you so much for joining me today, Caroline.
Thank you, and thank you for that warm introduction.
I always love learning about how people's upbringings have shaped their current life. And even though I've known you and your whole family my entire life, I feel like I don't know much about the years prior to when we met. So I'm so curious to hear about any instrumental moments in your early life that you feel like shaped where you are today.
Yeah, I think that there's so many to kind of go through. And I think that different moments sort of come up as I age, you know, like I'll go back to that moment and be like, oh yeah, that's why maybe I'm that way. But when I think about how I grew up and sort of what shaped me at a young age, I would say that, you know, I'm the youngest of four girls. I'm first gen Canadian to immigrant parents. So growing up in a home with that dynamic definitely has had an impact on who I've become and continue to evolve to be. I took French immersion.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I took French immersion. I took classical piano for 16 years. And I think why those things kind of had an impact is because they really sort of expanded my world in inadvertent ways. Like when I was 16, I had an opportunity to go audition and play for the Summer Pops Youth Orchestra.
It's just I didn't know any of this. This is so interesting.
Dorky, but I wanted to go to Europe and one of my best friends was in it. So she said, you know, why don't you audition and come to Europe with me? So at 16, I went to Europe with this group and it was a wild sort of tour. And then from there, I have family in Geneva. So I went on my own and traveled to Geneva and Switzerland, the rest of Switzerland, and kind of flew back on my own. And that was, I don't think I thought much of it at the time, but when being that I have kids now and I think about, you know, there was no cell phones, there was no Google Maps, and my parents just sort of let me do my thing at that age and, you know, going to Frankfurt Airport and navigating the trains and this and that on my own, I think really had me sort of end up being this really kind of confident or independent, self-reliant sort of trajectory in a way. I also went to Japan in 10th grade, which was really great. And doing different like piano competitions. I did a lot of that in my younger years, which I think also has contributed to my ability to kind of work through fears because I was so young and sitting in this tiny, like in this huge sort of auditorium with like a panel for judges. Right. And I was obviously so nervous and so scared. I remember my mom being with me at the time and giving me different tips on how to kind of work through those fears. And then of course, like after, it was kind of shortly after, like I got pregnant at 22. So that obviously had a huge, impact getting pregnant at a young age. And then I also lost my dad when I was 7 months pregnant with Noah. And I also got fired from my job also while I was pregnant. So all of those kind of huge defining moments for sure for me. And it really, like, I think the death of my dad and then becoming a new mom and all of that kind of sent me into this really huge stage of like an existential crisis of like, oh my gosh, what is life at this point? Because my dad was 60 when he died and kind of retired, and that was kind of a young age. So it really spun me into a place where I had to just kind of question what all of this meant and what, you know, being a young mom was. And I was with Devin, my husband, and who's my husband now. So I ended up doing a lot of like self-development courses at that time with Devin. And a lot of those were based around like working through your fears and kind of almost like a different sense of spirituality. Even though I grew up in a Catholic household, my parents were very open-minded. And I think because of that, that really kept me really open-minded. So when I kind of rediscovered through these self-development courses and worked through a bunch of fears and looked into another side of spirituality, it sort of just laid the foundation for kind of up until now and continues to, I'd say.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
That's so many things happening at once.
Yeah.
Would provoke so much thought about what everything means, what you really want your path to be, and all of that, which kind of perfectly leads into what I was going to ask you next. Yeah. And that is that I feel like you've been my second mom my whole life, and I've been so lucky for that. And through that, I feel like you have such a unique way of parenting. I feel like there's this balance of friendship and parental guidance that's really unique. I feel like a lot of people steer very far in either direction, but this kind of in-between balance, I feel like I see kind of rarely. And so I'm curious then, and I know you were saying that during the early time of having Noah, you were doing a lot of self-development courses, but I'm curious kind of how you developed your philosophy to parenting, or if it just came naturally.
Thank you. That's very generous. I think it came naturally because when I think back to it, it just feels like such a time of almost like survival mode in a way. Like there was so much, it feels like it was a simple time, but it was also quite chaotic just because I was navigating the loss of my dad, being a new mom. And then, you know, Devin wanted, you know, we were so young, like I was 23, he was 25, and, you know, he wanted to be a rock star at the time. So he was, you know, being in a band and doing gigs late at night. So it was actually quite chaotic. So I don't know that there was a lot of intentionality with my parenting, but there was definitely an opportunity through some of the courses. Like, I think that when I look at parenting now, it really has to start with myself. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I just remember thinking, like, what do I wish that I was told in order to help guide or navigate me through different times of my life? Or what were some of the things, like, why did I make certain choices that weren't supportive to who I was? And how can I make sure or do my best to make sure that they are rooted in making good choices for themselves? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I started with asking myself what was going on for me at the time. And I think a lot of the reasons why I made decisions that weren't so great in my teenage years is because I was just like insecure, didn't have a strong sense of self. So it was really important for me to create like a safe space for them, to really listen to them, to see who they were. And I think one of the biggest learnings for me in parenting was how much nature versus nurture. Like I was so naive. I genuinely thought that being a parent was so much of nurture, but most of it is nature.
That's is so what I've realized.
Yeah. Like I, you know, these two and everybody I think is really born with so much of who they are already. So when I saw that, it was like, how can I help them navigate life with a strong sense of self in order that they make the best decisions for themselves? So it were things like listening to them, creating a space that was non-judgmental, letting them know that I'm just a human, and even though I'm their mom, that I can make mistakes. So I'm not perfect. So feel free to challenge me in a respectful way, but challenge us as parents, and feel free to question kind of adults in general. Like, I think that a lot of adults always want to have this idea that they know everything and they know what's best. But if I could cultivate or help them cultivate something within themselves where they are nurturing what they know is best for them, then maybe they can just be guided by that, by really listening to a strong sense of self and really listening to who they are and trying to nurture that as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to talk more about offering judgmental listening ear.
Yeah.
A non-judgmental listening ear, because I've definitely had my chaotic moments throughout the years.
Yeah.
And I feel like anytime I've shared with you, it's like I knew I could share anything because I wouldn't be faced with judgment. But I also knew that, like, I feel like sometimes people think of a non-judgmental conversation as like not being checked or like having any sort of sounding board. Like it's just kind of like loose on the other side. It's like anything you say goes. But I feel like you foster this like, it's not judgmental, but it's still guiding and offering supportive advice. So how do you feel like you do that? Because I feel like that's relevant in so many relationships beyond parenting. I mean, I feel like that's something that everyone should be trying to cultivate with every relationship they have overall. So yeah, I'm curious how you kind of go about that.
Thank you for that. And that actually, that means a lot to me that you felt that way. And I think that we can go through life just not being present with somebody else. Like, you know, I have the shop and I'm in conversation with so many people all the time. And really just, I think the non-judgment part comes with just being super present with a person. And through that presence, you can remember that they're just another human being trying to get through life, you know, regardless of age, regardless of circumstance. And if you can, like, if I can just be there and listen with an open mind and heart with that foundation of humanness, that's kind of it. Like, that really is it. When you can approach another person from that perspective, it just creates a space and an openness for them to just be who they are.
Yeah, I love that. So well said. I think something that can be a challenging transition for a lot of parents is the transition from parenting children to parenting adults and that kind of in between teenage time. And now that both of your kids, Bella and Noah, are adults, I'm curious how you navigated that transition and how you find parenting to be different in both phases.
I guess I really, in their younger years, again, it was really about guiding them and nurturing them as best as I could. And I definitely had consequence. Like, I guess another really foundational thing for me in parenting them at a younger age was natural consequence and accountability. So if they did something that was sort of offside, you know, making sure that they understood that that's not okay behavior and that they need to have a level of accountability to that. And then hopefully, you know, shift, you know, whatever that is, right? And that was sort of my method of discipline, quote unquote. And honestly, like the teenage years, like they were never grounded, but they were accountable, you know, there would always be a natural consequence to that. And as adults, really, obviously, I don't have to do much of that because we can have a really adult conversation about decisions and this and that. And I really find myself like not having to do that. I think when Noah graduated, he was ready to be out and just experience independence, which is awesome. So he lived away like on UBC campus for the first year. And I think that was actually great. Like, I think that was good for everybody. I think it gave him the freedom and the independence that he needed and was craving at the time. And I honestly think that that sort of avoided a really contentious time that could have been sort of contentious for us. So that was great timing. And for Bella, she's always kind of been at home, but she's had the freedom to travel. And it's funny, like I don't feel like a parent to them, you know what I mean? Now at this stage, I definitely check myself and am mindful to not interject, I think, unless asked. I mean, obviously I screw up every now and again and I'm like curious or want to know or whatever, but you know, we're definitely in a place where I think because we've created such a strong foundation, they can say, hey, whatever, like lay off, whatever. And I don't take it personally. I'm like, okay, of course, like you do you and have your space. Like, what do you need right now? So I think at this stage of parenting, I'm more like, it's like a check-in. Where are you at? How are you? What can we do? Like we have kind of regular evolving conversations about where they're at and what they need or where I'm at and what I need. It's a very like mutually supportive relationship. So I think the biggest thing now at the stage of like parenting adult is just giving them the space, as much space as they need to just do whatever they need to do and trusting that if they need me, they'll ask. So it's a deeply sort of trusting space that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I've been so into the topic of evolving relationships recently because I feel like I used to think the way things are now, I need to be okay with that forever.
Right.
And like not recognize that two people are always evolving and the relationship and the way that it's all formatted, I guess, can always change.
Yes.
And I feel like like learning that and really recognizing it has been so comforting to me, and understanding like, oh yeah, like if I think back on any of the relationships I've had for many years, they've evolved so much throughout the years and will continue to. So yeah, that's just been a topic that I've been so curious about lately.
And it's like, I think that goes back to kind of what we're talking about, being present for the people in your life. Like I think that when you are present for the people in your life, you will pick up and see their evolution. And so when you can be witness to that evolution, then you can kind of evolve with that or not evolve with it, but still, right? Like it's like we're ever evolving people. And so much of what I find challenging is that people get these impressions of people and then they're just sort of locked into this thing of who they are. And I just really don't believe that and push back on that quite hard, that everybody has an opportunity to evolve. And, you know, we do ourselves and people such a disservice by locking them into this one thing. It's like, they're not necessarily that same person that they were, you know, a year ago. Yeah. I just think we have to have a level of openness with that.
Yeah, definitely. On a walk somewhat recently, it's been a while ago now, we were chatting about the difference between having a full and fulfilling life versus a busy life.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that conversation between us. And I feel like so many people would benefit from those insights. So I'd love for you to speak to what that means to you, the difference between the two.
I mean, I get told all the time, oh my God, you're so busy. Oh my God, you're so busy. Oh, I don't want to ask you because you're always so busy and that kind of thing. And it's just so interesting because for sure I like to think of it as like a full life, you know? And the reason that choice of words kind of shifts for me is because in a full life, I feel like I'm living with more intentionality. And in a busy life, I'm allowing just life to happen to me, you know? And it getting filled with things that are things that I may not want to do. And I've definitely gone through all different stages of my life where I did a lot of stuff that like felt obligatory or felt like I just kind of had to do them or I didn't have a choice in it. But I think the more awareness that we can cultivate within ourselves to like take a step back and get more reflective, then we can make choices that are intentional, and however we want to fill it is kind of up to us. And for me, I for sure have a full life, but I do it with intention. And the things that I want to support and the people I want to spend time with, I do because I want to, and I create space for it in my life. And does that mean that I might have a full schedule? For sure. And am I filling a lot of things sometimes throughout the day? Absolutely. But I also take time to just like veg out or, you know, take a day to fully to myself or chill or just relax. And I allow myself the space to just be lazy or be however you want to frame it or like restore or recharge, you know? And a lot of things for me I find are cyclical. Like, you know, September is a super busy month. So October will be more relaxing, you know? Mm-hmm. There's certain months or weeks throughout the year where it'll just feel more full. And that's okay, because then the following week I can just make sure that I create more space to not fill it with. But I think it's an important distinction, full versus busy.
Yeah, definitely. I actually just took an intuition workshop last weekend.
Oh, cool.
And something that I was really reflecting on during it is how I'm very keen to follow my intuition in my personal life, but not really with work.
Yeah.
And so in the past 6 months or so, I've been really focusing on following my intuition when it comes to work as well. But something that I've even more specifically been focusing on recently is checking in with myself, my intuition when it comes to taking on, you know, things in my schedule, like events and whatnot, because sometimes something on paper, it sounds like it's so, you know, aligned mm-hmm. and I should go, but just something inside me is like, you could just sit this one out. And whether that's because it's been a super packed week and I know I need to save my energy for other things, or I feel like even though it's aligned on paper, maybe I'm going to get there and feel like it's not the best use of my time. And since I've been doing that, I noticed that so often when I do say no to something, I end up hearing details about the event or whatever it was after and understanding exactly why my intuition was telling me to sit that one out. So that one's been big for me too in the distinction between the full and busy and making sure that, I'm really checking in with myself with everything I'm doing and making sure it's not just aligned on paper, but aligned with my energy that day and with how I'm feeling and all of that too.
It's so important. And it's so great that you're recognizing to do that in your work life too, because that's huge. And I think that that's a lot of how I've been doing things is based on intuition in my work life as well.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a big, big change. I feel like it makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
Okay, so switching gears a little bit more into the professional side, can you tell me the story of you and Daniel founding Walrus?
Yeah. So Daniel and I first met when I worked at Inform, my gosh, like 21 years ago now. And we had a lot of fun working there together. And from there, I moved on to a couple of different places. And at one of the last firms I was with before we started Walrus, I was like the sales manager and I brought Daniel on to help build our sales team there. And we did a lot of trade shows and that kind of thing together. And we were under a lot of stress sometimes with these shows. And at one point, it was just this really defining moment where we were 14 days into show in Milan. And it seemed so like awesome, but it was so much work and it was so stressful. And we were both honestly in like tears at moments. But we were still getting along really well. And it just was this question that I said, I'm like, we clearly work really well together. We should just try and build something for ourselves. So it became like, well, what do we both love? And for sure, both of us love like pastries and baked goods, but neither of us were chefs or pastry chefs. So the other thing we both shared a passion for was like design and small, specifically small objects and interesting design. So that was literally it. It was like, what do we love? We worked on a business plan for several months. We did a lot of research and we looked at shops that we really admired and things, holes that we felt were happening in the city at the time. And then we found a location and basically opened up shop. And it definitely was from the outside, like not a great time to open brick and mortar because it was 2008 when like the economy crashed and none of the banks were going to give us the money. But for us in our personal lives, it felt like very a now or never moment. And there were questions like, okay, if we don't do this now, will I regret it? And, you know, how much is this going to cost us actually? Like pragmatic things. And if it fails, like, can we dig our way out of it? That kind of thing. But we managed to get a small loan. We put a little bit of money in ourselves. We secured the space and then we opened in February 2009. And now it's been 15 years.
Amazing. And I love that you were saying that you pursued being business partners after going through a hard time together.
Yeah.
I feel like that's so huge. I remember there is this moment, this was years into Devin and I being business partners, but where we were in an airport, I was talking to an airport employee and so unlike me, but I literally burst into tears in the middle of the conversation with them. And Devin was like, in that moment, I thought to myself, would Jasmine want a hug or would Jasmine want me to just handle this situation and sort it all out? And I was like, okay, yeah, she gets me, you know, like she just handled the whole situation. Ugh. I feel like that's so like me, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like in being business partners, there's so much more to it than business because your business is so intertwined with your personal lives. Like how you show up at work is a reflection of what's going on in your holistic life. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when choosing a business partner, there's so much more to consider than, again, like what's on paper.
Yes.
So do you have any advice for someone choosing a business partner having had such a long working relationship with Daniel? Because it's been more than 15 years now.
Yeah. I think that for Daniel and I, like a lot of our friends were like, are you guys crazy going into business together? Like we had a lot of pushback in so many ways,
People say crazy things in the beginning. I find that now that we've been in business together, Devin and I, for three years, people don't really say anything now. Yeah. But when we were first starting, they'd be like, oh, like we give it 6 months or like you might be fighting after a year. And I was like, this is so odd that that's such a, it's so common.
Oh my gosh.
And I was surprised that people feel like confident to even be so vocal about things like
that. Just wait till you get pregnant and have a child. Like, I feel like, I don't know if it's just a female thing, but people give unsolicited advice or opinions all the time. And especially when they, maybe it's even when they're, you're challenging their own, you know what I mean? Like their own sense of like purpose or their own, you know, like I feel like maybe when you do things that are slightly outside of the norm or outside of like what people deem to be safe, then there you open yourself up to a lot of judgment. That's kind of what I've learned, I feel like. And so we had a lot of that kind of pushback similar to you and Devin. And then, but what I realize is on a foundational level that we share a lot of the same values. Like Daniel and I were brought up very similarly with like similar, really just values as humans. And so that kind of takes us through some of the hard stuff. And I think personal values versus business values, I don't know. Like I really think that there isn't much of a distinction there. Like if you're going to do something in the business realm, you know what I mean? That maybe I don't agree with, it still has to come back to your personal values, you know, because how you do something in business, I mean, would you do that in your personal life? I don't know. Not me. Like, I don't know. And I know there's a lot of people out there, but that's what I would want in a business partner too, is like, what are their personal values? And I think that that is what carries us through and has carried us through so far.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like when your values are aligned, everything is so connected to that, that even if you do have a disagreement, it's usually more surface level and therefore very easily workoutable.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do you feel like the Vancouver design and retail scene has changed since you opened Walrus?
I think it's actually gotten a lot better. I think that at the time when we opened over 15 years ago, there wasn't a lot of people at the time who were championing local design. And that was a huge thing for us. We had a lot of creative friends. We had a lot of friends that were in the design community that people just weren't seeing or championing, or, you know, it was still a time where people were putting art in cafes and a lot of locals were getting international or moved away, getting international recognition before they were getting recognized here. And I do think that that's changed over the years. So I think that the Vancouver design scene, like people are a lot more engaged with design. Since then, people are having a broader understanding of what design means to them. I think it's slowly filtering into like just sort of mainstream Vancouver more, and people are considering it a lot more. There's a lot more events around design that give people an opportunity to have conversations, even in makers, like all these like culture crawl and the craft markets, like also this whole desire to support local has really shifted over the years. And it's like so much of like people have pride now that it's, oh, this is from Vancouver. And there's a sense of like, oh, I want to support local. And I don't know that that was the case as much all those years ago.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask if you noticed a shift after. I feel like there was a time during COVID where it was a really heavy focus on support small business in addition to support local. So do you feel like, did you notice a rise in popularity in that then and it kind of drop off? Or do you feel like people have consistently remained with that as a priority?
I think that COVID was a really obviously different time, and that narrative to support local was really great. And I think a lot of small businesses like ours really felt that. And I know Daniel and I are incredibly grateful for that. But it was also a time that if you were doing well financially, you were spending and shopping local because you weren't traveling maybe and you weren't going out to eat as much. So how that's shifted now is I think that while people want to support local, it's, you know, people's finances. This time right now is a bit of a tricky time. And I think in speaking with a lot of small businesses and restaurant owners over this past year, developers, architect firm, design firms, like it's all across the board that I think it's just a little bit of an unpredictable year. This year has been an unpredictable year. But so I don't know that the narrative to support local has changed, but I think it's just an like a fact of people's incomes and expenditures. And it's not just Vancouver. I think it's happening all over the world. I think that the shift that's happened since we opened versus now in retail is that, you know, the city, like rent is so expensive. Permitting takes a long time. So if you don't have that huge chunk of money to, you know, wait months sometimes for a city permit, it's going to be really hard to recoup that. So I think there's so many different factors that small businesses are facing these days. And some of that policy city stuff is like really monumental to impacts of small business for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You also host Pecha Kucha, a community storytelling event where speakers present 20 slides for 20 seconds each. After attending so many of these events, what insights have you gained on what makes a strong speaker?
It's funny because I get asked this sometimes for people who are about to present. They're like, tell me who your favorite speaker was and tell me what. And it's funny because obviously there are standout speakers, but actually the reason that they're standout is different every time. Like it's not necessarily the most polished speaker. I would say that the most impactful speakers have been the most authentic, ones that kind of stick to the spirit of Pecha Kucha, which is to share how they got to where they got, as opposed to it being like, here's my body of work and it being kind of their portfolio. I think that a strong speaker shares with a level of authenticity and vulnerability in this format. And that literally touches people in ways that are, you know, have longevity, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
I actually always remember the founder of Blue Heron.
Oh, yeah.
That one just sticks with me. And I feel like it was because it was so authentic.
Yeah.
And her just genuinely telling her story, it felt like she was just talking as opposed to like this whole formal presentation.
Yeah, feel. Exactly. Yeah. So it just, and the nice thing about Pecha Kucha is that it's a community event. So, you know, there's always going to be the speakers that resonate. There's always going to be somebody that resonates for you, you know, like it doesn't matter what that is. It might be totally unexpected. Yeah.
Are there any coming up? I don't know.
And not until next year.
Okay. Yeah. And how do you define personal success? Because I feel like this is something that can change throughout your life even. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at this present moment, how do you define that for yourself?
Personal success. I guess it just feels like it's a level of fulfillment maybe for me. For me, personal success is, can I go to bed at night with a clear conscience? Like, am I a good human being? Is there something that I'm doing to contribute to other people? How am I being of service? Am I living my life with a sense of integrity and authenticity? And am I honoring like who I am? And am I, you know, really trying to practice, you know, living with that throughout the day? You know, I am obviously there's like pragmatic things like financial success, business success, and all that kind of thing. But I really do think that if I am moving throughout the day with a level of integrity and authenticity, while being a critical thinker, like I don't want to get caught up in being too like starry-eyed about stuff. Like I definitely think that it's important to have a level of groundedness and critical thought. But as long as I'm doing those things, then all the other things will follow. You know, the money will follow, the people will align. And I genuinely feel like I feel very fulfilled. And Yeah. I think that that's like, you know, if at the end of the day, I'm like, oh my gosh, if somebody told me that tomorrow would be my last day, like, do I feel like I've lived a full life or a life that is true to me? And honestly, like I genuinely feel that way. Not because like I'm so satisfied or I don't think I could grow more, but because I feel super grateful for everything in my life and all the people in my life.
Oh, I love that. That makes me happy. But yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that defining, of course, everyone can define success in any way that they want. But I think for me, defining it in a way that is not tied to a specific accomplishment,
like
distinguishing between accomplishments and success,
yes,
can be important, because I think that there are always ebbs and flows in the accomplishments you're checking off.
Yeah.
And if you're basing your like personal success and self-worth on accomplishments during the ebbs, it can like hit you so hard.
Yeah.
Whereas when your sense of success and self-worth is not so tied to like these check marks, you do just feel more fulfilled and more like at ease, I think.
And the check marks, I think, will come.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Because if you're like, for me, I think I like to stay curious and I like to stay learning. So for me, that's like important, right? So everybody's, like you say, everybody's definition of personal success is going to be so, well, personal.
Yeah. What advice would you give to someone looking to take the leap into entrepreneurship?
Someone told me a long time ago, like, think with your heart and execute with your mind. And I really took that to heart when we were working on the business plan for Walrus, because I think that, you know, entrepreneurship can easily be romanticized, but it is a lot of hard work. And there is a sense of resiliency that needs to come with entrepreneurship. And it's not for everyone. And that's totally okay. Like, not everybody is an entrepreneur, and that's not everybody is all these different things. You know what I mean? And entrepreneurship is one of those things that I think a lot of people think they can do and they can do with ease, but I don't know that that's actually the case. Like, I think that you can have a best laid plan, but I would also advise to like stay open and to think about what inherent skills you do have and what you can bring to the table and what you don't have, and allow other people to do that, to do that with you. And don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Don't be afraid to reach out to people and stay curious, but definitely keep a sense of openness.
Yeah. In what you're saying about, you feel like some people are more geared towards entrepreneurship than others, are there certain traits that you see consistently through successful entrepreneurs?
Again, I think it would be their sense of like being willing to learn and grow and evolve. Like, I think that those types of entrepreneurs are like, because there's so many things that are outside of our control as entrepreneurs, right? Like, obviously the pandemic or things like that, that can happen that just, you never could plan for something like that, you know? So if you are so rooted in one thing and determined to just get this one thing and push your agenda all the way through, and if it doesn't work, then what? You know what I mean? So I do think a lot of successful entrepreneurs have to have the ability to be ever evolving and be open to change, and also maybe not have such a big ego. You know, I don't know, because it's okay to be wrong. I think that in order to be a successful entrepreneur, it's okay to be proven wrong. You know what I mean? Like, and I've worked for some people who are just so self-serving and only have like this tunnel vision. And it's so unfortunate, because, you know, the more tunnel vision you have, like, it's great to be a visionary, but you know, I think that you need to be open to seeing what's around you and being able to receive like who's around you. Like, if there's somebody who can do something better than you, be open to that and allow them to shine and rise and like foster that.
in them, you know?
Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. And the pivotability is something that I always mention too, because I do think that is the common thread where if people have this one set plan of what entrepreneurship looks like to them or what that business looks like to them, and as soon as it goes off that path, they feel like it's a failure as opposed to an opportunity to just go in a different direction or course correct or whatever the case may be. You're not going to get very far if you're not, you know, able to get off the beaten path.
Yes.
Yeah. Who do you look to for inspiration in the design world?
Oof. I don't know that there's any one person, actually. I look to the people that are around me. Like, I look to my friends. I look to my maker, like, you know, people who are makers. And I think that, again, because it's always evolving, I think that there's so many creative people in my fold that are just really inspiring because they just choose to do what they do and do it really well, you know? And honest, like, you're one of those people. Like, I think that you're, you know, you might not be classified in the design, like, quote unquote, design world. But I just think, you know, your sense of openness and curiosity and your drive to just explore and get things done. And it's like you have an idea and you execute it. Like, that's really inspiring to me. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. And when you're coming across so many new brands, I'm sure a lot reach out to you.
Yes.
And then as well, you kind of going on your own search, how do you decide what to carry?
So a lot of it goes back to intuition on what to carry. Walrus as a brand definitely falls under like a contemporary aesthetic. We also love supporting local. So if it's local and hand done, Daniel and I naturally, like, we have a love of ceramics. We have a love of, so sometimes we get really heavy into a certain material or a certain thing, but how things are made, the functionality, the price point, and if it fits within the Walrus, like, contemporary aesthetic, those are generally the things that we look at. And some things fit really well, and some things are just like, we love it, and some people don't love it. And some things are just not the right fit, obviously, you know? And sometimes it's really clear what's the right fit. And sometimes, you know, it's not actually. And we have to kind of, we either take a risk on it and try it. But every time we kind of veer away from something that isn't, that we kind of have a feeling may not work, but we kind of choose it based on what we think people might like, actually, it doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gotta be the right combination of things.
Mm-hmm. So do you have kind of like a set vetting process, or is it very fluid? And
it's very organic and very fluid. Yeah.
And I think that makes sense in the design world. Like, it is, it's a tangible world. And so to have this kind of set of guidelines of what you'd carry and what you wouldn't is so kind of like against the grain of what it is all about.
Yeah.
So that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. That brings us to the very end of today's podcast. So where can everybody find you?
I'm personally on Instagram at CD Boquist. Walrus Home is our shop Instagram, Petrikucha Vancouver. You can find me in the shop. I'm still there like 3 to 5 days a week. And yeah, I'd love to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on.